Voice of the Cape Drive Time 91.3, and welcome to the show. It is Thursday. I'm Shafiq Morton. Assalamu alaikum. And coming up, nothing to celebrate in the mini budget, but we're going to take a different angle. South Africans still stuck in poverty, Kashmirians to protest, and Kenyans go to the poll amidst death and protest. Stay tuned.
Drive Time 91.3, always on the cutting edge.
91.3, welcome back to the show. Finance Minister Malusi Gigaba's maiden budget performance in Parliament. Oh yeah, we know. But there are still some serious questions. Online is Dr. Azhar Jameen, Chief Economist at Econometrics. Dr. Azhar, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum to you and your listeners.
I'm going to kick off with a rather interesting scenario. Everybody was getting emotional about the nuclear deal. Mr. Gigaba, who has had to face reality quite starkly, one sentence talks about the nuclear deal and he moves on. Yesterday we spoke to the Russians, who are basically denying that they were behind Mr. Makhlobo or that they are putting any pressure in terms of a nuclear deal. And they say that in terms of a nuclear deal, nothing is on at the moment other than suggestions. What do we make of all of this?
Well, I don't know actually what to believe anymore with regard to the nuclear deal. Certainly, Minister Gigaba has made it quite clear that the government cannot afford a nuclear deal of the kind projected. I actually get a bit annoyed about this whole nuclear deal story, because the issue seems to have become so polarized between those who are totally against the nuclear deal, as if the nuclear deal equals nuclear power, and those who are who say that we desperately do need a nuclear deal and we do need nuclear power, conflating the two as being one and the same thing, without separating the concept of building one or two new nuclear power stations down at the coast so that one doesn't have to transport electricity from coal-fired northern areas of the country to the coastline. Do we really need eight new nuclear power stations to produce 9.6 gigawatts at a cost of R1 trillion? That doesn't mean to say that nuclear has no role to play. A couple of nuclear power stations could be very useful in the longer term.
But I'm sure you'd agree if we can afford them.
Well, one or two, I think we can afford. We can't afford eight.
Yeah, indeed.
But why is everyone talking about the deal as if it's eight or nothing? Why can't we have one or two?
Yeah, that is certainly a valid point you're making there. Yeah, you know, when I go to buy a car, I don't need eight, I just need one, isn't it? I mean, I think that's a fairly fair kind of analogy. I must confess, the Russians, when we spoke to them yesterday, I think they're also equally annoyed about some of the hysteria that is surrounding the whole thing. So, you know, if we sort of sit back and remain calm, how much do you estimate then, for argument's sake, that one nuclear power station would cost us? Because one nuclear power station would put a significant percentage of power into the grid.
I think it can vary, but we are talking about 150 to 200 billion rand. It's not cheap. But the beauty about nuclear power is that once you spend that money, the ongoing maintenance costs are very low, which is different from the other forms of energy that you produce. So, you know, there are pros and cons, but I would have thought it's in the order of what I have suggested at the moment.
Interestingly, okay, I mean, none of us are power experts, but it does play into the economic landscape quite profoundly. We spoke to Chris Yelland, who is an energy expert, and he says at the moment, because of the, I don't know whether it's a recession, whatever we call it, but because of the slowdown, he said at the moment we've got a surplus of energy right now as we both sit and talk. But of course, he says that if the economy picks up, we could have problems again. But at the moment, we've got a surplus.
Yes, and that don't be too complacent about that surplus as being necessarily permanent either. Firstly, as we discovered in the 90s and the previous decade, you know, in the 80s we had very low growth, And we had this huge surplus, and that lulled the apartheid government to get into a deal with ferrochrome and aluminium companies to supply them with electricity at remarkably low levels, which made it very profitable to have those metal processing businesses going. The problem was that as soon as the economy started growing by even just 3% per annum, as it did in the 90s, before you know it, 3% per annum compounded over 10 years suddenly becomes an additional 50% capacity that you need. And so that's so Chris Yellard is absolutely correct. But there is a further reason why one must guard against complacency. At the moment, the major portion of our power supply comes from coal-fired power stations that were built in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Mm-hmm. Their typical life expectancy is 40 to 50 years. Then they become unprofitable. And the potential is that after 2025, we could see like falling off a cliff in terms of the closure of existing power stations because of their age. And you need to have power stations to replace those. Power stations are not in place indefinitely. They are not permanent features. So we do have to think longer term and forget about being ultra complacent and think that right now we've got a surplus and therefore we must sit back and do nothing. We do need to plan ahead. And if you are optimistic about the South African economy, that we can get a new leadership that that addresses some of the structural problems that exist in the economy, then before you know it, we could be growing much faster, and then we will run into a power supply crisis within a short period of time.
Do you think the key to all of this, and again, I'm sure you agree with me, this does play into the economic landscape again, that it's beyond urgency that Eskom gets its act into gear and that it becomes professional and starts to do a proper job, that surely that's going to be a long way to part of the solution?
Yes, I think the Eskom story is a very sad one, actually. I mean, I remember Eskom being regarded as the jewel in the crown of South African's economy in terms of, you know, we had one of the most efficient electricity supply utilities in the world, a huge one that was actually supplying the whole of the subcontinent. And to see the way it's been mismanaged and exploited for corrupt purposes now has been very sad. I still believe, though, at the heart of Eskom, I mean, the lights wouldn't be shining right now if there weren't some degree of decent management and operational efficiency, which I think still exists. I think we still have the human manpower at Eskom actually continue with it. It's just that so much has been wasted over and above what could have been achieved.
Do you think government has realized, because I must confess, it was a very contrite Mr. Gigaba that gave his delivery. I measure a lot by body language and tone of voice, that this man who was Mr. Zuma's fix-it, I'm sure you agree with me, he's had a reality check, and I think he's quite shocked by it, actually.
I agree, and I think every one of us expected that to happen. And, you know, when he did take over, I don't think he expected to recognize the difficulties that Pravin Gordhan had faced and thought it was an easy show and that Gordhan was just playing, hard to get.
And I think he's realized now that it's a very sober job. A final question. Harsh realities we have to face as South Africans. He spoke about the possibility of tax increases. I think February is going to be quite dark for people in that sense. But where do you think a government is going to get this tax money from? Who's going to pay these taxes?
VAT. I don't think there's any other option anymore. And I think that came through very clearly if you look at these figures that were released yesterday. Hmm. The collections for personal income tax are 21 billion rand lower than had been budgeted for. Now, how does that come about? It's simply resistance, and people are taking strain and also are resisting paying more personal tax. And it shows it's a kind of situation where if you tax more, you'll end up getting less. We've reached that threshold. That's become quite obvious from a personal tax point of view. So the only alternative is to go the VAT route, which will hit at the corporate sector as much as the personal sector, and go way beyond the upper middle class, that 1% of the population that basically accounts for two-thirds of all personal income tax collected. I think the only way out now is VAT. They could introduce wealth taxes, but I think they have concluded that it's too difficult a tax to collect, and it creates all sorts of distortions as well.
So when we talk about a VAT increase, would it be by...
Every 1% increase in the VAT rate theoretically could raise 21 billion rand of additional revenue. VAT takings are anticipated now for the year at 301 billion rand. So if you take a 1% increase, 14 to 15%, that's about a 7% increase in the VAT rate. From 14% to 15%, 7% of 300 billion rand is 21 billion rand.
Would that be enough?
Clearly it wouldn't be enough, but the beauty about doing it the VAT way is that you could be fairly sure that you're going to get that money, and it's fairly easy to implement.
And of course everybody feels the pain, not totally equally, but probably a bit more equally if maybe some other measures were taken.
That is correct. That is correct. And I know from a political point of view, people say, oh, but how, with an election coming up, how can they afford to do that? And I'm saying that what better time to do it than in 2018, when you still have a full year to play with. The alternative is that you'll be forced even more certainly to have to raise the VAT rate in 2019, and you don't want to do that 2 months before a general election, so rather do it earlier than later.
Yeah.
Depends obviously on who's the new leader of the ANC and potential president of the country.
Absolutely. Now, final question. Do you reckon, and a lot of people are telling me that there will be a lot more comfort if more responsible leadership wins the ANC leadership race, and if some leadership is actually shown, that could actually calm the waters quite a bit? Obviously, it's still a heavy road ahead, but at least it will give us a bit of direction.
You know, the common view, and it's been expressed even today by Fitch, they say, is contestation within the ANC. To forget thinking that December is going to be the climax, and that, you know, everything's going to die down after that. That there'll be a lot of infighting within the organization even after December, and I buy that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I think could happen is if the right person were to be elected, many would suddenly have a little bit of hope, where currently there is absolutely no hope if the current regime is seen to be likely to carry on running the country through to 2019, taking it further and further down into the quagmire. I do believe that if the right person were to be elected in December, you could suddenly get a little bit of a revival in confidence. I don't think it's enough. I think that new leader would have to prove himself and show capability and leadership to start taking some tough decisions on how to restructure the economy. And I think the disappointment about yesterday's budget was that there was no vision of how to actually get us out of the morass.
Absolutely, period. Yeah. Dr. Azza Jameen, thanks for your time, Chief Economist at Econometrics, talking about issues surrounding the mini budget and what could be in store. Dr. Azza, as always, it's been a pleasure.
It's a pleasure to me.
Drive Time on 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.